the expression from the music inspired me so much to take risks, and it inspired damn near the whole rap game.
Hello again, I'm Adam Ons. You may know me as the host of The Opus, and now I'm bringing my own show, The Spark Parade, to the Consequence Podcast Network. I speak with artists and creatives about the cultural artifacts that spark their personal interest and creativity, whether it's music, books, movies, video games, or any other kind of art.
I've never spoke about it in this amount of detail. I'm suddenly going, oh my God, I'm blowing my own mind here, Christ. It's actually a giant part of my life.
By talking about the things we love, we share and discover insights into our personality and the things that drive us.
It's just magic, really. I mean, frustrating. And it makes some people angry, but I don't think anyone's ever done anything like it.
I speak with people like Connor Roberts, Phoenix's Thomas Mars, Chris Gethard, Helen Hong, Adrian Young, and more, so their sparks of inspiration can start a fire in you.
I'm grateful for those who continue to put our history and who we are as a people in the forefront and make you see it.
Find the Spark Parade wherever you get your podcasts.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
9 times.
Mr. Brown. Mr. White.
You know, for kids.
Mr. Blonde. Mr. Blue. Mr. Orange. Mr. Pink.
Why am I Mr. Pink?
I see dead people.
1.21 gigawatts.
Their obsession.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Their words.
I'll ask you again. Did I urinate on your rug?
I drink your milkshake.
Someone else's movie.
I'm a god.
You're a god.
I'm a god, not the god.
Directors, screenwriters, actors, and film fanatics record feature-length audio commentaries for the films that changed their life.
I want you to get up now.
Hey, how come Andrew gets to get up?
That's right.
If he gets up, we'll all get up. It'll be anarchy.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
That's The Sidetrack.
Do you think you're out of tune?
Consequence Podcast Network.
Support for this season of Assembly comes from the Improv Asylum in Boston, Massachusetts, and New York, New York. Consequence of Sound in Chicago, Illinois, and New York, New York, and
Catherine Beckett in Brooklyn, New York.
If you'd like to support Assembly, visit our website, www.theassemblypodcast.com, or you can email me directly, theassemblypodcast@gmail.com. Oh, we're about to start. Here we go.
Hasn't got to be worn, and I've wrought the pattern of the beast of this shore. She's foaming up at the lip, you see, getting warmer in the middle. She's carrying all the trash away, more than just a little. We're worn, we've got to move away from this shore.
The Modern School of Film presents Assembly, a look at what brings us together in parts. My name is Robert Milazzo, and I'll bring you what I see, what I hear, and what I learn. Now, let's start the assembly. Thank you. thought that the best way to start this final part of our assembly is the same way we began it just four parts ago, with a full disclosure. So for the final time, if you'd allow me, I woke up this morning wondering if today was either the first or the last day of David Cross's assembly. I actually woke up last night wondering it too, but the question was sweatier and more panicky. The answer, of course, is it's both. Today is both the beginning and the ending of David's assembly. However, it's also the ellipsis. We got together this season to explore and maybe understand a little bit better how David puts together a new act of stand-up comedy. But, big but, who knows for how long or even if he'll continue to develop what he started. Work or life or some unforeseen human upheaval on a scale we've never even contemplated before could alter what he's doing so significantly that tonight becomes the end of these jokes. Though I seriously doubt that last thing I mentioned will happen. I mean, what are the chances, right? But let's not talk about fare-thee-wells now. It's Friday, and in a few hours, David and a sold-out room of 100 comedy lovers will get together and shoot the shit and see what happens. In super lay terms, David's writing new jokes. Well, drafting new jokes. That's how I see it now. It's funny, when I first reached out to David about exploring the process, I wasn't thinking I'd be sitting over his shoulder as he sharpened his pencils. But I also never thought that his way into writing would rely on the chemistry of a room. It's a pretty fickle chemistry. No pressure, room. In a profession that is far less sexy than meets the ear, maybe something more tangible than chemistry would be less challenging. And anything less challenging wouldn't be as funny. But when David looks out into the room, when, as Sarah Silverman told me, his stuff hits the air, what is he thinking? And who are some of the people thinking back at him, breathing the same air? It's funny how unfunny basements are. Closets, though, are hilarious. Here's the final part of the assembly. David hit the atmosphere. What's your name and what do you do?
My name is David Cross. I make cookies. A computer, that you get on your computer. Not the thing you eat.
Not Famous Amos.
No.
What does go on in your mind when you're on stage? Your mind.
It's, for me, there's two things happening. Currently, I'm subconsciously just working and intuitively trying to write the bit, sell the bit, perform the bit in the best way I can, which means pausing, cadence, tonality. And I'm not thinking about it. It's happening. It's happening subconsciously. And the other thing is barely consciously, I'm noting the room. I'm noting how things are being reacted to, and I'm adjusting. This is a little different because it is so loose, and I feel like I can kind of get away with stuff and be more in the moment. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, you know, and I can comment on stuff. And once I start doing the set, I'm kind of on tour, and it's week or show number 37, and I'm in, Saratoga or wherever the fuck I am, and I'm doing it, and I'm having a good time, and I'm doing it. My mind will wander. You can be doing your set. You're doing a bit for the 100th time, and you're doing everything. You're selling. You got the points. You're doing it, and your mind just wanders, and it's like, it's the weirdest thing, and you can literally be thinking, not in a really clear way, but you can be thinking, oh shit, I didn't turn off the stove. I need to turn off the stove. I think I turned off the stove, did I? Oh yeah, I did, because I left. Yeah, I did. I did. I double backed and I turned off the stove. Okay, we're all good. And then you just kind of come back and you're in the middle of your bit. Theater actors probably know what I'm talking about, especially when you've done it a million times, and it becomes like muscle memory and sense memory, and you're just doing it and you know how to do. And maybe it's different with acting because there are other people on stage, but when you're doing a monologue and you're standing there, yeah, I mean, your mind can wander. You'll see people. You'll see somebody. See somebody with their arms folded with a scowl, and you'll think, what's up with that guy? I wonder if I should do it. And you just start thinking about the stuff, and then you come back to your stand-up and you do it. And there's occasionally you'll come back and you finish the bit and you're like, what was I talking about? Diapers. That'll happen. It's the weirdest, oddest thing that the human brain is capable of.
I was thinking of, you know, my football analogies this morning, but
when the 49ers played the Bengals and Joe Montana was quarterback, there's a moment in that last drive and everyone's tense, like, lead us here. And you know what he did in the huddle? He said, hey, there's John Candy.
Yeah.
When you think of that, is that a mark of it's really working? Like it's all connecting? Or is it just kind of a weird metaphysical pop?
No. I don't think there's anything necessarily positive or negative about it. It's just a thing. I think the only thing it really denotes is that I've got it down by, you know, it's all memorized, I suppose. That's the only thing. It's so memorized and I've got everything all, you know, again, the cadence of performance. I pause here, I raise my voice here, and I point over there. And that you've just done it so many times, your brain allows your mind to wander, you know. I don't know that you'll be able to understand it unless you actually do it, but I know other stand-ups know what I'm talking about.
I can't really describe it. I've been doing it so long that it's just such a natural state of being for me. It's just a heightened way of being. My name is Patton Oswalt. I'm a comedian. When I'm doing stand-up, I mean, when I'm on stage, I'm very, very present in the what is happening absolutely right now. I'm very lucky in that I don't really do shitty gigs anymore. It's usually a theater that I want to do in front of a crowd that I want to be in front of. And so I'm not like kind of switching my mind off and going, let me just plow through this shit. I'm doing my act, but I'm also enjoying watching how the audience is enjoying it or not reacting or reacting. That to me is all. I'm very, very, you know, in tune and present for that. I like it. I never really float away. I do think of, I can think of different variations on something that I'm doing, like, oh, what if I add this later? You know, something will come up. But I don't really do the whole, oh, I got to go pick up milk or I got to return that, you know. I want to be there for the show and watch. I mean, the crowds fascinate me, so I want to see how they react to things always.
Yeah.
I'm in my head but present. That's the best way to describe it.
Do you ever turn to the audience and see yourself?
No, not really.
Do you ever have that moment like the tightrope looking down? Oh, fuck. You don't know how to move forward or backwards. Have you ever been stalled on stage?
Sure. More so when I was like coming up. But there have been shows I wasn't ready for, you know, and I can think of some specific ones where I just I shouldn't have done it. And I got talked into it. And also your narcissism, or your ego makes you think, potential spam. Your ego says, oh, I can, okay, I'm not ready, but I can be ready. I'm good enough. I'm a professional. I can do this. And then, you know, you're on stage and after about 30 seconds, you're floundering and your stuff isn't ready and you realize it and there's 3,000 people. And that's happened a couple times. Sometimes it's okay. And sometimes it's just you walk off stage going, why did I do that? Why did I do that? And then sometimes you are ready and you just, I did the TV taping, hosted the gala at Just for Laughs. And because it's a taping, the audience is lit, which is not preferable to me, the entire audience, you know, and that happens with any taping, really. But and I was I was over halfway through with the tour, so I had done 50 shows at this point. And, you know, it's a very prestigious thing, and I was very honored to be asked to do it. My opening set was not good. I just got thrown. Somebody said something. I didn't hear it correctly. I was like, what? And it just, I was not connecting with the audience, even though they were happy to see me. You know, I made a mistake that I've made several times before, and I just don't learn my lesson, which is to try a new joke, something that occurred to me on that set, you know, and I'll come out and I've done this at least a dozen times in a big show, big important show, and something happened on the street or whatever, and I come out and I open with this thing and people are like, huh? I mean, literally I'm doing like 7 to 12 minutes to open up, and I've certainly got enough out of an hour and a half to pull 7 to 12 minutes, but again, it's kind of like an ego thing, like, oh, I got this, and sometimes you don't.
Afterwards, you just go home.
Yeah, it's late, dude. I got a kid, you know. I mean, these shows, if it's the 7:30 show, then I'll definitely stick around. And usually, you know, one or two people there, and I'll have a beer or two. But tonight, and I can't drink because I'm on these medications, so I'll just go home. And I was thinking I might not even be able to ride my bike, which I usually do, like the way I feel now on these muscle relaxants. It's going to make the show a little more interesting. We'll see how sharp I'll be, you know what I mean? The fact that it took me a while to remember the phrase, how sharp I'll be, is significant. So we'll see. So yeah, probably just going to call a cab and just hop and go home. And because I'm going to have to get up at 7 with a kid anyway, you know?
Remedially, because I may not find you again on tour. What are the next steps?
The next step, there's like three phases, really. Four, I guess. There's this part, which is part one, phase one, which I'm almost done with, which is just completely informal, fucking around, stream of consciousness stuff. And then the next thing is Littlefield. I'll drop one of the special guests and I'll do more time in between, and they'll start to feel like sets. I'll still fuck around, but that will have less fucking around and more, it'll be a longer set that will start to feel like material feels like it's should be next to each other, the bits. That's phase two. And then I'll move to a bigger room than that, which is Bell House. And then it'll just be me still talking to the audience, still not trying to present a set, you know, beginning, middle, and end. And that'll be when I really sit down and ask questions and go, okay, because by the time I get to the Bell House, I have constructed it like I think it should go. And then I'll ask the audience, and last time the audience was extremely helpful, like applied what they had to say. Less of that, more of this. Put that there, don't do that there, you know. Drop certain bits that, you know, nobody liked. And then the next phase, which is very short, you only do maybe two or three of them, is you just do the set. Here's the set, that's it, and that's it. The great thing about doing this is one of two things is going to happen. Either I keep doing it and I develop material, I keep accruing material and I work it out, I workshop it, I shape it, all that stuff happens, and then I go out on tour. Or work comes and I put that in my back pocket. It's all good to go. I just stop doing stand-up this way, and I do sets occasionally here and there, but all the work I'm doing is not for naught. It will eventually see the light of day. I was looking at kind of the bigger calendar, and I was like, even if I got this ready, I don't want to go out in the summer. I'm not going to do that again. I went out, I started the tour, the last tour in the summer. I would want to start in the fall and go fall through winter, or winter through spring.
Why don't you want to tour in the summer?
It's just the shows aren't as good for me.
Is it you or the audiences?
I think it's the audience. You know, I'm not seasonally affected.
Summer David and winter David.
No.
Aside from the calendar, when do you know if something's ready to play the big room, so to say?
Oh, there's nothing you could point to and say, oh, I got 92 laughs ready to go. You know, it doesn't work that way. It's that's something that one would tell oneself, you know.
Can the structure be...
Okay, this is the last one because I got to go.
I'm sorry, man. Can someone else use this structure? Or do you have to have a certain latitude and longitude as in your career? Like, can a young comic do it?
Sure. If you have people coming to your show and willing to sit through kind of fucking around, then absolutely. Yeah, anybody could do it. It's a somewhat obvious approach to putting a set together, and it's not like I have some patent on it, and everybody's welcome to do it if it works for them. Yeah, I mean, it works for me. It's fun, and as I said, it's like it's my audience, and it's just a pleasure. It's never, you know, it's never not anything short of really fun, and sometimes it's really, really fun, and then occasionally on very special nights, it's really, 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 really fun.
Were you an artist? Stand-up comedy, is that an art?
Yeah, sure.
Hey, man, thank you so much.
All right, thank you, and I'll see you tonight.
I'll see you tonight.
All right, cool.
And I'm glad you're feeling a little more upright.
Yeah.
Each season, I seem to find myself back in Brooklyn for some reason. I'm like Gabe Kaplan or something. Union Hall is a bar in the Park Slope area of Brooklyn, New York. Union Hall is a well-appointed but surprisingly loud bar, made even louder by, I kid you not, two bocce ball courts laid out side by side, inside, in the main area of the bar. Grandma definitely didn't get her comedy here. Underneath, or downstairs, or in the basement,
There's a modest stage and a performance area of about 100 seats. Very cool, very cozy, low ceilings, super intimate. And you can actually hear the person you're sitting next to or standing with. So it makes sense that David would want to stage this first stage here.
My name is Janine Garofalo, and I am a stand-up comic.
What is alternative comedy? Or, you know, can you put that one to bed?
I don't know. That is what I consider alternative comedy, since that term exists, is people doing stand-up in a venue that is an alternative to a traditional stand-up comedy venue.
Mm.
But the reason I think there were articles written between 92 and 96, a lot of times myself and David mentioned, was alternative music broke. And I think some journalists in Los Angeles and New York decided to just categorize some of the comics like myself and David who were doing shows like Beth Lapidus' shows, Luna Park, as alternative comedy. Myself and David and a lot of the comics were dressing, I guess, the way people who like Weezer dress, or Pavement, or, you know,
Ween,
Liz Phair, Juliana Hatfield, because it is a taste issue. You know, you tend to have a certain style of comedy, a certain taste in music, a certain style of dress, and like-minded comics tend to find each other through music and politics and outward appearance sometimes, things like that. There was a definite similarity between myself and David and Laura Keitling or other Emerson comics and Karen Kilgariff and Beth Lapidus and Moon Zappa and all of these people. And David was he's an icon.
Do people come to see him or his act?
It's both. People come to see him because he's David Cross from Mr. Show with Bob and Dave, from Arrested Development, from all manner of things. David means something to them. So does Bob. That show means something. Arrested Development means something to people, but really, Mr. Show. And those are the toughest fans in the world because, boy, they feel betrayed when David or Bob go outside of that zone. They come to see David because they admire and respect him, and they come to see what he's going to say. It's like seeing a band to a lot of people. There are people that travel to see David, and, oh, my God. Was that your question, by the way? You said, do people come to see David or the stand-up? Because I thought, did I mishear you?
No, you're doing it. You're doing it.
No, he's an icon. He means a great deal to a lot of people.
Excuse me, are you here to see David Cross? No? Okay. That's okay. Hi, can I talk to you about David Cross? He's here tonight. Did you know that? No? Okay. Can I talk to you for 2 seconds? Because I heard you say David Cross is here, or maybe he is. He will be here. What's your name and where are you from?
My name is Darren. I was originally from Baltimore, Maryland, and I live in New Jersey now.
Awesome. What are you doing here at Union Hall?
I'm celebrating a friend's wedding.
Did you know David Cross was going to be here tonight?
I did. I looked up this venue, and then I found out that he was going to be here tonight. I'm like, oh, I hope I see David Cross tonight.
Who is David Cross?
He is an amazing comedian. He was on one of my favorite shows, which I'm blanking on, with Jason Bateman and, I'm just terrible with names. Pronouns are like the worst for me, but I find him to be hilarious.
He's asking the audience for feedback on his new material. Do you think that's brave, or do you think that's standard stuff?
I think that the thing about a comedian after 7 or 8 years, you learn to read the room, and I think that, so I find that unusual.
What do you think of Brooklyn?
Oh, it's lovely. It's lovely.
What do you think of the fact that David's going to be here? I mean, in the sense of this is a super neighborhood spot. Is it strange that he would try out? He's trying out some new material here. Is that interesting, strange?
Why wouldn't he do that here? I would think it weird if he was in, like, Las Vegas trying new material. Actually, I saw David Cross in Las Vegas walking through the Aria Hotel once. I'm like, oh, that's fucking David Cross right there. And I was like, huh, I'm not going to bother him.
So you didn't want to be that guy.
I didn't want to be that guy, but I still wanted to be that guy, just to sort of like let him know he was appreciated.
Do you think David's work engenders the that guy syndrome?
I don't know.
In the sense of, do you think he comes off as accessible?
No, not to the mainstream.
How does he come off?
He's smart. Before the unfortunateness befalling Aziz Ansari, he's a very smart comic, and he doesn't care who his audience is. Right? So he actually would say that very frequently. There's like certain people where he didn't want to be mobbed by certain types of people because he thought that meant that he was watering down his material too much.
Can David ever do or say something publicly to put you off?
I'm sure he could. Anybody could.
Do you think comics are in a bad spot now these days with the again, the Roman Colosseum that we live in of the thumbs up, thumbs down culture. Do you think it's a tougher time, or do you think it's an interesting time?
I think when you go to a comic show, people who like comedy, there's like going to an action movie. There's a suspension of disbelief. And so there's a suspension of sort of the rules of, to some extent, what you can say and what you can't say. So I think that there's, in some ways, it's a safer space for taking on things that are more controversial for the sake of humor. I think it's one thing when people think that you're doing this as an act, and another thing when they actually believe that's who you are.
Last question. You're here on a school night. I'm always fascinated by people who wear bars at school nights.
Bar nights will get old for me when I feel like I'm old in a bar.
Arrested Development, ring a bell?
Arrested Development, thank you. Oh my God, why couldn't I remember that? I couldn't remember that. So, Arrested Development, thank you for reminding me.
What's your name and where you're from?
I'm April Osborne. I'm from California, Southern California. I live in Bay Ridge, which is far south of here.
What brings you out here tonight?
We're here to see David Cross. I think we were both big Arrested Development fans. Have not followed David's career significantly outside of that, but, you know, excited to see what he's got going.
So your point of entry for David is Arrested Development?
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. And I am on the Union Hall calendar emailing list, which is how I heard about it.
What are you expecting tonight?
I expect that he's trying out material for something. A lot of comics do that around here, so I assume it's going to be... I can't remember if we're later or earlier in the run.
I think we're later.
I think we're later. Yeah. So I assume it will have been run through a bit, and we'll see.
Do you know the processes he's going to turn to the audience at the end and ask for feedback? Does that cow you, or does it interest you?
I don't have a problem with that. I think Amy Schumer heckled me and like years ago, and I hold it against her still.
Right.
It wasn't a big deal. We were at like Eastville Comedy, where we got also free tickets, and we were signing the check, and she did not like that we were signing checks. I don't know. And we were trying to be as quiet as possible, but she thought we were being too loud, and so she yelled at us for interrupting her set. It felt like heckling. I don't mind giving feedback. That's fine. That sounds like a much more positive toward the crowd.
If the tickets were twice as much, would you be as forgiving?
I might be a harsher critic for more expensive tickets. Twice as much is still not that bad, but we probably wouldn't have jumped on the tickets as quickly as we did.
This is kind of embedded in New York, this thing.
Yeah,
you said it happens, but... is it cool that it's so commonplace, or does it feel less special because it's so commonplace?
I mean, we've been here for 10 years, so we're kind of used to it, but I think it is one of those things that like makes living in New York worth it. I think there are a lot of annoyances about living in New York and getting to do cool things like this, and where it is like an easy thing to do on a Friday night without having to get in line for hours and hours or travel a significant amount of distance or even pay very much for a ticket. Is one of the great things about New York, and I think we appreciate that.
What's your name and where are you from?
Alexander Kavan, and I'm from Plentywood, Montana.
Plentywood, Montana. David and I were talking about Montana today.
Oh, why?
I'm recording his process to put a show together, and he thinks it won't be informative. And I said, what about that young, up-and-coming comic in, let's say, Montana, who may be listening?
Yeah, I actually used to do stand-up comedy in Montana, so... And David is a huge influence of mine, so how prophetic of you to think of that.
Have you seen David do stand-up before?
Yeah, I saw him last year.
Where?
The Bell House. That show was the one where he...
coined the name.
Yeah, where he coined the name. He asked the audience, and they responded overwhelmingly. The names he had were very rough and too punny, I think, for him, and I think that's... I mean, I think a lot of his fans probably recognize that. So I mean, that was kind of my take on it, and someone shouted it out, and everybody thought it was great.
Do you still do stand-up?
Not as much as I did in Montana, because New York is a whole different show. It's a lot of, like, hustle. New York is like, you want to do stand-up comedy for a career, whereas, like, Montana had a stand-up comedy scene, very supportive. I think it's still going pretty good now. It's been a couple of years since I've been back, but in New York, you run around to a bunch of open mics and hope, you know, you get like 3 minutes after 2.5 hours of everybody getting drunk and all the regulars going ahead. So it's a lot more demanding, and that kind of turns me off about it, but I still do comedic stuff outside of that, for sure. I came here with about $6,000 and barely made it, and then ended up just essentially getting lucky with a job and still here, still holding on. I'm a software engineer by day.
What do you think of being part of this feedback system? Did you offer feedback before? Would you offer feedback if David wanted feedback from the audience tonight?
Yeah. I've always had a respect for his, like, he usually does like smaller shows for sure and takes care of his, especially his New York City fans. I mean, this show is much cheaper than what he'll eventually go on tour for. His connection with his fans is a lot more intimate, I feel. That's something to look up to. And the fact that he still continues it today is something to also take into consideration. He has obviously honed his craft in a certain regard that works with being closer to his fans rather than being someone huge, not to knock anybody, like someone like Jeff Dunham, you know, the puppeteer, sells out like huge stadiums all the time. And he's very talented, you know, and deserves it, but like his intimacy is probably a lot lower with his fans.
Last question, are you excited about being part of the development process, or are you just going to sit back and see what happens tonight?
Oh, I try to participate if I can, but probably not trying to heckle him or be that guy.
Hey, David, these guys are from Montana.
These are the guys you were talking about. I didn't want to interrupt. Pleasure to meet you.
Awesome to meet you.
Thanks for coming.
Great show.
Thank you. And that's my... So I got to go.
Bye, Dave.
All right. But keep talking to him.
All right.
You seemed a little starstruck.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Huge influence for me, but also I think he has more of a wide-ranging fan base, bigger than the people who directly love him only for stand-up. And I think if you can get past one of these crowds, then, he's been in New York a long time. He knows what he can do.
So here we are. It's all over but the laughing. Well, first the laughing, then the talking. David's about to work the room. No more Greek chorus or mentors or friends or family members, thank you by the way, or phone alarms or muscle relaxers that I know of. It's just David and what's on his mind and on his music stand for some free-range comedy. Then he'll bump up the lights. So tug on your ear and come back. Rubber meet road. But now this. Here in the break, I'd like to tell you about the Modern School of Film. The Modern School of Film is a school where I get to teach you how to make things, creative things, your things, work that is your voice, like assembly maybe, classes in making, storytelling, documenting, writing, culture, sometimes plain old movie watching. Oh, and occasionally we'll teach you how to take a punch or two. Thanks, Professor Dolph Lundgren and Professor Wesley Snipes. If you'd like to take one of our online courses, please visit us, www.modernschooloffilm.com. All the information is there. You can email me directly if you have any questions. Also, follow us at Mod School of Film. I'm so grateful that students from around the world take Modern School of Film classes, and I'm even more grateful to have learned so much more than I could ever teach. So check us out. Now, back to the assembly.
Union Hall, please welcome your host for the evening, David Cross.
So yeah, how's everybody doing this Friday night in Brooklyn? Yeah. All right. All right. Does anybody have any questions? It's not going to be great. It's going to be good. There'll be moments of greatness, but that's what this is about, just kind of riding on stage and building on what I started with, and that was not good at all. Trust me, the first two, they're never good. They're fun. And I've definitely got now, at this point, I have material. I mean, I do. You'll see. I have three guests, and they're bringing it. They've got their A game. They've top-notch stuff. So you will be entertained at some point. If there's 10 minutes of me, like, and you're going, what the fuck? You know, somebody will be on here, and they'll be, boom, all their, you know, stuff that's been worked on. This is... I'm working on stuff. So the first part, this part right here, is about as loose as it's going to get, except for the very, very end. You'll see. But in the middle, I'll be doing bits that I started, whatever it was, you know, nine shows ago, and they weren't that really realized, and now they're becoming more realized. And I'm still experimenting, so I may a bit, if you've been here, I know there's a number of people who come to several of these, and if you saw a bit that was really good in, like, show number five, and now I'm like, I may be fucking with it too much, so that bit will go down. But I'll learn, and I'll ask. That's another thing. This is all interactive. We're all one here. I mean, there's a phalanx of security here if you dare speak out. But if no, but this is all I want to hear from you. You know, and I'll talk to you at the end of this, and it's fun. I enjoy doing it. And this first part, very loose, just saying hi, but then I'll be doing like bits. Some bits again, killer, and some need work, and some. That'll be the last time it's ever said out loud. It'll be never said again. Sometimes it'll be said here, but never. I'll never bring it out because you've told me not to. I've been on drugs since Monday. I had a laser surgery on my left eye on Tuesday. I didn't know I had a show Monday night, and I did not know when I scheduled these shows, and I knew I was going to have that operation on Tuesday. I didn't know that the day prior, they wanted me on drugs all day before I went in. So that show was interesting. Yeah, I got some good stuff. I was really swimming, though. I was really... it took me a while to find the word or the concept, and it was. Oh, and I was also drinking. I wasn't supposed to drink, but I was like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna have a beer," and that turned into two and three, and I shouldn't have done that. And I've punished myself by having more drinks, and so that was it. But I stopped. I was on gabapentin, if you've ever been on that. It's like a muscle. It's a muscle relaxant that just makes you go like, And I've been on that. What?
Just takes the edge off.
It takes more than the edge off. It's turns you into a doughy mass, really. But, I mean, you can get that. I mean, I had never had it until this thing, but my dog has it. My dog's on gabapentin, amongst other things, for real. And I didn't realize I could just, like, I mean, I can literally get gabapentin for my dog forever. I can do it forever and then just always feel like this. But yeah, it really kind of, it's sort of like you're sort of, you know, dragging some weights underwater. And what was the point? So, oh, I stopped. I stopped as of today. I'm supposed to finish the bottle, but I feel all right. It's not hurting as much. And so I stopped the afternoon one. So I'm better. I can tell you right now, I'm better right now than I was on Monday. That's for sure. I'm not giving that audience their money back. Fuck that. But it was still good, and lessons were learned, and we all had a good time. And I was so fucked up. I think the show ran, because I tape all these shows, and then I'll listen to them later. And I think the show ran, like, it was well over 2 hours, which is not right. But seriously, are there any questions? Because I got a bunch of answers.
So right here is where I'd play you those three 10-minute sets David did of his new stuff. But ever since I first approached David, he's made it clear, please do not show the shit I shot. So I shan't. I shall not show the shit he shot, which is cool because that was never the point. I never cared much about the jokes he made or the laughs he got. It's always been about dialogue. And David agreed. So this is that.
If anybody was offended, you can come up and hit me, it's not, I'll be like, all right. Now's the time to hit me.
What bits were you most surprised by tonight working?
That's a good question. Well, I didn't try too many really new things. Like, there's one bit that I did a lot in the last tour, and then I dropped it fairly early as my set expanded. And, you know, if you do 80 shows, your shows expand because you're riffing and stuff. And I always try to keep it to an hour and 15 minutes, not counting an encore. But that's the sweet spot. You don't want to go over that. And then you just start dropping stuff. And there's this bit that I did that I like. I keep meaning to do it, and I don't do it. I don't know if I'm gonna, if I've got it. I mean, I want to be as funny as I can be. Let's just do a. I can do this. Let's just do like a traditional kind of Q&A. Any questions anybody has?
Is this the highest you've been on stage?
No. And I would say I'm high. I'm just. You know, I'm on drugs. I'm not, but it's like medicine drugs. So no, I took mushrooms with a bunch of friends in San Francisco decades ago, and we all knew we were doing sets. So it was all people who were going to do. It was at the old improv in the Fisherman's Wharf area, and we all took mushrooms and we were drinking and. It wasn't awful, but it wasn't good. And every time I can handle my liquor, but I don't do well with weed or hallucinogenics. I get paranoid that everybody knows I'm high when nobody does, nobody. And then I'll say after 60 seconds, like, okay, I'm really high. What?
When are you working with Bob Odenkirk? I'm sorry.
Bob Oden and I have, we're trying to get Kinko's back. We're doing a thing where, yeah, like, what happened to Kinko's? And this is for real. I had this idea. I was talking to Bob about doing a comedy camp where we do it, like, you know, in upstate or something, in Poconos or whatever. 2.5 days, and you get cabins, and you stay there, and probably... wouldn't be cheap, that's for sure, but you'd have to get yourself there. But then we'd feed you and we'd have cabins, and then it would be Bob and David's comedy camp, and we'd get a bunch of our friends, you know, performer people. We'd have shows and kind of interactive type things for a whole weekend, and then at the end, like, whatever it be, Sunday night, Bob and I would put a show up with all our friends. And it's wrong to say that we're working on that, but that was an idea I floated. He loved it. So maybe there'll be a Bob and David comedy camp. It could be really fun. It could be a disaster. You know, I said this to him. We're going to have to get, like, a wedding planner. Like, literally a wedding planner to come in and, like, work with us on this. Like, how do you feed people? And, you know, where do knives come from? You know, like, just, like, delegate that, all that stuff I don't give a shit about. What? The sheets aren't 300 count. What? All right. Yes, sir. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. You didn't do much politics this time. Are you thinking to stay away from politics this time?
No, not really. I don't know what to say anymore. I mean, it hasn't occurred to me a new... I've never liked that kind of... nothing against these people, but I don't like the kind of strip show, Bill Maher. Like, I don't give a shit about that. Those are temporary. They've all been said. There's not no... Yeah, I haven't seen a truly clever take in a year, 2 years. And they're funny. They make me laugh, but it's such a temporary thing. Like, I watch The Daily Show, but it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't stay with me. And I don't know how to get past that obvious thing, and I don't know what the new angle is, and I don't know what else to say. I can't believe that people are so... I mean, of course I can believe it. I grew up in the United States. So of course I can believe it. I grew up in Georgia. And maybe something will occur to me. I hope it does. But I haven't thought of any kind of fresh, new, like, oh, no one's thought of this before.
Are you worried about cancel culture?
Yes and no. I have had some backlashes for two things in particular. But I haven't done anything that I think I don't... I don't think I've done anything that's... egregious. I'm positive I haven't raped, and I haven't jerked off in front of anybody. I haven't made somebody feel like, you have to blow me if you want to get out of here. You know, I've never done that. And I have said things in I look back on that was like, well, that wasn't cool. But it hasn't really. I just don't have that shit. And you can go through my stand-up, and there's really There's a handful of things that I said that are definitely like, I did a show, a benefit for a children's, raising money for like, I think Catholic children's charity thing. And Alanis Morissette was after me. And I did this character, this thing I've been doing. And people didn't know, they didn't know me as well as people might know me now. And could I get another one of these beers? Also, anybody can leave whenever they want. The show is over. It's officially over, so you can don't feel bad. So it's this character that was a well-meaning, his name was Ainsley McTree, and I had my hair back, and I come out with a guitar and thank you so much for coming. My name is Ainsley McTree, and these are songs meant to rise the spirit and rouse and, you know, whatever. And I'm the whole time I'm just tuning, and I don't know how to tune a guitar or play it. And I would talk about the plight of the Native American and the genocide and how we took the land. But then it got into very graphic language about what we did, you know, symbolically, you know, and we skull fucked your children, you know, and it was just like, whoa, wait, you know, the idea, the joke is like, he's really well-meaning and earnest, but that's inappropriate language to use. And and I did that, and that's definitely something I think if you, it was really, it's still funny to me, I mean, I get the joke. But if for somebody who's like hypersensitive, acutely sensitive, maybe is the proper thing to say, I could see how if somebody found that and, you know, be like, this is bullshit and, you know, this is racist and it's wrong and it's awful. I have a handful of those things from the past. It's a little unsettling. At least I can say why. And there aren't very many bits I had where I was like, fuck you, I think it's funny. You know, I think I can defend the context of what it is and what it meant. Class is not over. Again, no, please, you can leave. I'm just, this is fun for me, it's self-indulgent. It'll be better when I get that beer. That beer's gonna be great, because this is hot. I've had this for a couple years. And also, when I'm done with this question, if you have any comments about any of the bits, like, I like that line, why didn't you do this, anything, I'll take them, I'm happy to, I appreciate they help me, but I'm sorry, my eyes are all over the place because I can't see, but you're over there, yes.
What did you think about Jeffrey Epstein?
You know, I miss him. But I do, hang on, before I get to that, it just occurred to me, because he hung himself. What a missed opportunity for autoerotic asphyxiation. You would think that'd be his last. Maybe he did. Maybe he did. That's the cover-up. That's the cover-up. Are there any bits you thought, that's not good, or what if you did this, or did anything occur to you?
Have you thought about using actual...
I'm right here.
Have you thought about using actual quotes from politicians when doing the politician bit? Like Biden says a lot of very interesting things.
Oh, no, that's a great idea, though. That's a great idea that I will use. seriously, that's a great idea. I could cobble a bunch of them together. Maybe, God, if there were enough that I could just pull from everything and make one crazy monologue that's all based on real shit, you know, people said. Politicians lie, even the ones you love. I love Bernie Sanders, but I'm sure he's, well, maybe not Bernie, but everyone else, like pulling some bullshit about, you know, I was in, you know, Ames, Iowa, this woman came up to me, and da 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 da. And it's just bullshit. It's like the same as when preachers and rabbis tell a story about, I was at Key Foods. This is a preacher. I was at Key Foods with the Talmud in tow and the young woman, you know, whatever. But I don't want to make it just Biden, you know?
I mean, crazy shit politicians say. Like, I run a trivia night at the Double Windsor, and I've done, guess who it is? Is it Biden, Trump, Putin, or sorry, Stalin or Hitler? And you'd be surprised.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah. It could be anything. It's just like any kind of random quote, and you have to guess who
That's
said
a good
it.
Idea. I'm going to take you up on that. Not that you offered it as a thing. I'm stealing it.
My gift to you.
Okay, thank you. I will take you up on that. That's a good idea, and it's clever, and it's cool that at the end I go, guess what, motherfuckers? this is who said it. And then, you know, okay, well, thank you guys very much. I do appreciate it. And, all right, I'm still talking. All right, sorry. Thank you guys so much.
Good luck in surgery.
How was that?
What?
Did you learn stuff tonight?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I don't know if I'll know until I listen to the transcripts. I think that I riffed a couple good things that I will definitely use, but I'll have to listen to it.
Does this exhaust you, stand up physically at the end of the night?
Not really. I'm usually kind of amped up. I get exhausted when I get home, but the... when I go out on tour and the grind of it, yeah, it can be very exhausting.
Are you waiting for this phase to be over? You know, you talk about phases. Are you done with this phase mentally, looking for the next phase, the bigger room, the bigger house?
Well, I know that it's coming, and I'm just sort of enjoying this, the luxury of not having to work, really, and just going, hey, I'm just fucking around and doing that. And then, you know, we'll move into Littlefield where it'll be less of that and more. That's where the work will start coming, where I'll pare this stuff down and focus it.
Thinking of this almost like in terms of cocktail napkins of thought or paragraphs of thought, you talked a little bit about this process with Bob and Mr. Show. Is that kind of how you beaded it out? Is the riffing of stand-up different from the riffing of sketch, let's say?
Yeah, because sketch has a beginning, middle, and an end, and you have a concept. And... you know, it can be high concept or low concept, but it's you're telling a tiny little story in 3 minutes, and stand-up is different. It's a monologue, first of all, and it's a guy, you know, there's no theatricality to it, not like a sketch has.
Where were you looking during the set? I was watching your eyes a little bit. Where what's your eye line? What are you literally looking at?
I can't see anything. It's just dark, except for the bar. You can see the light of the bar, but so I'm just looking out. I look down a lot. I've watched, you know, when I have to edit a special, I look at the ground a lot, at the floor, and I pace. And when I'm looking out into the darkness. You can't see. Hey, Mark, how are you? But
when do friends come to see it?
Like my close friends or my wife or anything? I'm like, no, I've discouraged people to come at this stage and just wait. Probably when I get to Bell House. Phase 3, I'll ask them to start coming. I will go over to, the Fish rehearsal practice space, and we'll have a jam session with Fish playing. They play in the background, and then we mute all their instruments, and we just play a studio album, but not a Fish, of the String Cheese incident. And then we'll jam. We'll have a jam session.
What is the Amber of it all, in the sense of, does she ask? Like, how did it go? Does she kind of...
Always asks how it goes. And but in that kind of cursory way, the same way I ask her how something goes. Like, hey, how was it? And they tell you, and then, you know. And you can get a sense if somebody really wants to talk about it. I don't really at this stage, at least until she's... knows it and knows the references and stuff, but she will be extremely helpful once I invite her into the process. And it's nice. It's a nice invitation. It's on like a kind of a cream ivory, thick stock, gold embossed calligraphy. There's a wax seal. It's sent by Pigeon. It's the only way I would invite Amber to anything because I respect her.
Well, I'll leave you with this. You did say something to me today that no matter what your fog is about the surgery or the procedure, the mindset of you, I hadn't thought of that. I mean, what was on your mind tonight?
Well, definitely tonight was not ideal. I'm definitely in a bit of a fog. There's a little kind of diarrhea of the mouth where I was just talking and I was trying to find my way. It wasn't great because of that. And like I'm talking to you now and I'm just like, I truly think I've lost 35 to 45% of my vocabulary that would be at my command or at the ready, but I just don't have the words for things. And that's, that's literally everything you have as a comic are words. So yeah,
Are you going to take a mulligan?
I guess, kind of, yeah. I mean, but this is the time to do it. And it was still fun. I tried to get everybody their paltry money's worth. But, you know, I wanted to make sure people had a good time. And I don't know how much I will gain from this particular set. As I said, I'll go back. I know I riffed a couple of good lines. But honestly, if I get five new lines a night or five ideas that blossom into some other thing, and also really good suggestions from the audience, very good, very helpful. I mean, that's worth a lot. That's worth a lot.
There, right there. That's it. That is David's Assembly. David created art, then showed it to people. They responded, and now he'll take it from there, regardless of where or how far or for how long he takes it. Let's go down to the assembly. He's taking something from each part, and so have I. Tea with David, lunch with Amber, secret meetings with comics on their lunch hours. Muscle relaxers, phone alarms, spam risks, expats from Montana, bocce balls, and some of the most fun and enlightening phone calls, and yes, even Zooms, that I have ever had the privilege to place. This assembly made it clear. Do the work. Do the thing. Make the date. Share. Listen. Engage in the dialogue. Stay open. Manage your ego. Repeat. There's no success or failure. It's face up and take a shot. Make and miss. Joe Strummer once said, no input, no output. And he was right. Well, Joe Strummer was usually right, but I digress. Yes, what we make is never entirely up to us, whether it's a laugh or a shout. But if we never put the thing in motion and face front with it, we never make the sound. So, as we end this assembly, and David and I part, I'll split the difference with him. Yes, maybe at times this week I was trying to firmly grasp the obvious, but I never placed more importance on anything than it deserved. Sometimes we don't have access to the most obvious truth, and sometimes only a tourist can see the beauty in our own backyards and our basements. Oh, and not everything is teachable. Some things, some people, we kind of just have to be around to see their lives and their work a little more closely and apply that meaning to ours. Assembly is created and produced by me, Robert Malazzo. Original music for this season is by Fred Armisen. The Assembly theme is by A&R. Visit our website, theassemblypodcast.com. Send any questions, comments you have. You can also suggest an assembly you'd like me to feature on the show. And of course, you can contribute there. Your contributions are incredibly appreciated, I promise. Assembly is a presentation of the Modern School of Film.
Consequence Podcast Network.